chapter 9 that we are going through, we covered up to verse number 31 last week, that it is not that pursuit of this world, whatever material possessions we pursue in this world, it is not that they do not bring us happiness. Isn't it so? Obviously, to drive a nice car, to live in a spacious house, to have a comfortable bank balance, to have name, fame, power, beauty, all this brings us a certain amount of happiness and peace. However, the spiritual aspirant must understand one thing, that no matter whatever material possessions you have, one thing material possessions cannot take away. And what is that? They will give you peace of mind. They will give you happiness. Otherwise, nobody will buy a big car, nobody will buy a big house, isn't it? So we cannot deny that material possessions, pursuit of the world, will give us happiness, will give us peace of mind. But what is it that they don't solve? It's temporary, no doubt. But still we pursue it, right? We know it's temporary, but still we pursue it. Because why? It gives us happiness. But what can it not solve? Attain moksha. It cannot take away your impurities, isn't it? Your greed, your pride, your anger, your ego. No matter what you acquire, you can go on acquiring the best house, the best car, the best food you can eat. One thing it can never do is it can never take away the negative impurities that are in you. In fact, the more you possess, the more you get, what is going to happen to the negative impurities in you? They are going to get stronger. I have this house, you know how many houses I have, you know how many cars I have. What is that? Ego gets stronger. You know how famous I am? Ego gets more and more stronger. Greed, pride, all get more and more stronger. So we should not confuse this and understand that pursuit of the material pleasures is not wrong. But it is not going to help me to remove my most fundamental problem, and that is the negative impurities in me. So that's why Krishna says in verse 30, he said, Api chet sudaracharo. Durachar is one who leads a adharmic life. When the word su is added as a prefix in front of duracharo, durachar, it means the one who has broken all the rules in the book. The one who leads a totally adharmic life, a most sinful person, sinner of all sinners. Even that person, Krishna says, the minute he turns his direction to me, what happens? He says, Ananya Bhakti, with single pointed devotion. That's very important. Turn the direction towards God. It is not that we run away and give up our material possessions, but we seek God for the purpose of purification of mind. We want to remove these negative impurities in us. So we seek the help of God. We turn towards God, and that's why he introduces the power of devotion in chapter 9. Devotion is such a powerful tool that it will help us to purify the mind only if that devotion is Ananya Bhakti. Ananya Bhakti means single-pointed devotion. Not part-time devotion, not as and when you like, but genuine single-pointed devotion to the Lord. And with this genuine single-pointed devotion to Lord Krishna says, the minute the person changes his direction of seeking, what he says, such a person deserves to be called a sadhu, a saint. Because even though he has been a sinner in the past, pursued the world, pursued all kinds of material desires and pleasures, yet the minute he changes his direction of seeking peace of mind, security from God, what is on the mind of this person? Think of God. So what is in the mind of a sadhu? Thoughts of God. So there is no difference between such a sinner who has changed his life and now he becomes a sadhu. Sadhu merely means one who has a clean mind, a purified mind. So this person now follows the spiritual path, and what happens in 31, Krishna said, Shipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Shipram, very quickly. For him to purify his mind, Dharmatma means, Atma here doesn't mean the soul. Atma in verse 31 refers to the mind. The mind turns dharmic. The mind pursues all kinds of dharmic activities and actions. And immediately we can understand, we can realize or experience the purity of mind. What do you mean by purity of mind? How do you define purity of mind? Do your?
Free from
all the impurities. So how can you experience this? What is the sign of experiencing a purified mind?
Peace
of mind, calmness of mind. Here he says, Shashva Chanti. He attains peace, Shanti. The sign of a purified mind is a mind which is not filled with greed, lust, anger, desire, ego, etc. Thus the mind is at peace. And if the mind is at peace, on the contrary, you can live with all your possessions happily, isn't it? You can have as many friends you want, as many relatives you want, as many possessions you want. Because your mind has found the peace where? In God. So when the mind is already in peace, you don't have to worry about what possessions you have. In fact, your very need of greed will be less and less and less. What you have will not make any difference to you. What you don't have will not make any difference to you. Why? Because where is the source of your happiness, peace and joy? God has become your source of peace, happiness and joy. And to such a person, Krishna gives a promise. He says, Name Bhakta Pranashyati. The last line of verse 31. A very powerful promise here. Krishna is giving in black and white writing. Right? Contract is giving you. If you turn your mind towards Him with single-pointed devotion, Name Bhakta Pranashyati. Meaning, my Bhakta, my devotee, Na Pranashyati, will never perish. Now, what does it mean by will never perish? It does not mean that you will get richer, you will get more material possessions, or more people will like you. What it means is such a devotee will never have a spiritual downfall. Whereas earlier in the verse, in the earlier verse, what he said in verse number 24, those who do not know him, those who do not pursue him, he says, they fall. They fall means what? They have a spiritual downfall. Why? Because they pursue only material possession. They pursue the world for their happiness, for their pleasure. And when Krishna says that my devotee never falls, never perishes spiritually, it means from being a bhakta of Lord, what is your next progress? From being a devotee of Lord, how will He help you? He will bring you to the path of knowledge. Once you have that faith in Lord, once you have that devotion to Lord, He will then take care of you. Once you seek shelter from the Lord, He says, those who seek shelter from me, then you become His responsibility. It is His responsibility to show you then the right path to knowledge. So the right guru is provided, the scriptures are provided, the right environment is provided for you to grow. So at the first level, when you pursue by devotion, you pursue God or divinity, you remove all the negative impurities. This is your first barrier to spiritual growth. In fact, why we cannot progress spiritually is because of these negative impurities. And thus by devotion, with the power of devotion, you clear away your negative impurities. Then you come to the second hurdle. What is your second hurdle? What is your obstacle to knowledge? Ajnanam, your state of ignorance. That is your second hurdle. And that hurdle also will be removed through the application of knowledge. Thus, guaranteed you are of moksha. That's why Krishna is saying, Name Bhakta Pranashyati. Having said that, now in the verse 32 that we discussed partly last week, he talks about those people who have disadvantages. They have bhakti, they have devotion to Lord, but they have certain kind of disadvantages. And what are those disadvantages? he said in verse number 32, he categorized four type of devotees who have some type of disadvantage in progressing in their spiritual path. And what are the four type of devotees here? Who face obstacles. Now, when one more thing, when we talk about devotion, here Ananya Bhakti, we must understand this Ananya Bhakti very well. Because here now what we are studying is called Advaita. That means there is no difference between you and God. This is Advaita philosophy. But then in India, or rather in Hinduism, there are many schools of thought. So you have those devotees. So here we must be very clear what is Ananya Bhakti, because we are talking from the perspective of Advaita. Now, if we talk about worship, if you talk to Shiva devotees, they will say you will reach moksha and only when you reach where? Kailash, right? So to them, moksha means reaching Kailash. Then if you talk to Vishnu devotees, they will say what? You can only reach moksha when you reach Vaikuntha. And if that's not enough, Shakti school devotees will say what? This world of moksha is the world of Amba, and it is called Shri Puram. That is moksha. And if that is still not enough, Ganesha devotees will tell you what? No. Moksha is what? Moksha is when you reach that goal called Ananda Bhuvana. That is where Ganesha resides. And then Subramanya devotees will tell you what? The goal of moksha is called Skandagiri, where Subramanya resides. And you know that even Ram and Lakshman, when they left this world, they went to their own abode, which is called what? Saketa. That is the abode of Ram and Lakshman. And if this still doesn't confuse you, then Krishna devotee will tell you, no. Moksha is what? When you reach Krishna's abode, which is called Golok. Right? Golok. So there are so many presentations of what we call, what is moksha. But when we talk about Ananya Bhakti from the point of Advaita, where there is no difference between God and us, Advaita Bhakti just says one thing. If you want moksha, you must learn to dispose of your mind. That is moksha. Dispose of your mind. Now, if I tell you dispose of your mind, you will tell me, are you out of your mind? Because how do you dispose of your mind? So what does Advaita philosophy mean when we say dispose of the mind? Now, if I have a shirt that doesn't fit, it's very easy, I want to dispose it, I take it off and throw it away. What happens if I don't like my skin? Can I dispose it? So why? I am so much attached to the skin, I cannot dispose it. Similarly, we are so attached to the mind that how do we dispose this mind? So when Vedanta says dispose the mind, it is just like this. If a cloth is filthy, a washing cloth, wiping cloth, what do? You don't throw away the cloth. You wash it, you rinse it, you clean it, and then it is usable. So when we say dispose of the mind now means what? Huh? Wash your mind of the impurities. It are these impurities that you have to wash, because the only thing that is standing between you and God are these basic impurities. So to attain God means what? To dispose of the mind. To dispose of the mind means what? Remove those impurities. The minute you remove those impurities, you will experience that God within. Because where is the God? It is. So here Ananya Bhakti, we must be very clear. It means that process to remove the impurities through devotion. Now, so there are some people who have this disadvantage. So what are the people here he discussed? He says in verse 32. He says, Partha, addressing Arjuna as Partha, Mam Vyapasritya Ye Api Param Gatim Yanti Mam Vyapasritya, those who take my shelter, those who are totally devoted to me. And that's why when I said Ananya Bhakti definition is what? Reaching Brahman, reaching the Absolute. So when he says those who take shelter under me, here he is talking about those who have not yet reached the highest, but they can reach, he says. Even those people, ye api, yanti, they will attain Param Gatim, the highest goal, which is moksha, even though they have certain obstacles. So, who are the people who have obstacles generally in life? The first type of person he mentions in line number 2 is Papa Yonaya. Papa Yonaya, Yoni, the word is womb. So, Papa Yonaya means those who have taken birth in sinful wombs. So, what is the greatest disadvantage they have? Wrong type of family. Family that is not spiritually inclined, but only inclined to material growth and material pleasures. So such a disadvantage is there, and for that person to gain spiritual knowledge becomes very difficult, because there is no guidance from parents and wrong environment is there. And the very classic example we saw, but somebody who got out of it is Prahlad, who was born in the house of a demon. His father was a demon. So that is one type of person who is disadvantaged. The second we discussed last week is called Striya, which means woman. Third is Vaishyas, who are engaged in all types of agriculture and commerce and labor. Sorry, agriculture and commerce. And the fourth one he mentions here are Sudras, who are engaged in all kinds of labor. So these four people, they are disadvantaged because of various reasons. Papa Yonaya, we can understand, due to past karmas, due to past births, actions in past births, now they are disadvantaged because they are born in the wrong environment where there is no spiritual inclination. Now what about the other three, the women, the Vaishyas and the Sudras? How are they disadvantaged? So, for,
why women?
Yeah, that's why people get very angry about this word. Why God will pick on women? Why specifically pick on women? Men all will get moksha. Why women don't get moksha? So here we must understand that when we talk about Vedanta, this scripture we are reading is Vedanta, is primarily for pursuit of wisdom, is it not? That's what we are all here. We are in the pursuit of wisdom. And wisdom requires what?
Time and knowledge.
It requires you to apply what? Your mind and your intellect. Isn't it? It has nothing to do with your physical body. Right? Whether you are talking about qualification or disqualification of attaining jnanam, it has nothing to do with your physical quality. So, what is your height, what is your weight, what is your gender, all this has nothing to do with study of Vedanta, right? Because we are dealing with the subtle body called the mind and the intellect, right? So, in the Gita, when they mention the three types of people with disadvantage, it has nothing to do with women. It has nothing to do with physical quality. But it is the nature of the subtle body, the mind. So, that is the swabhava or the nature. So, what is the nature that some people have? Uncontrolled emotional mind, isn't it? Their minds are very emotional. Every little thing they cry. You have this kind of people. They are very sensitive, very emotional mind. And an emotional mind will always overpower the intellect, which is a fact. So, because why? Emotional mind has got a lot of attachments, sangha, attachments. So that's why even some people, they find a guru, they get so attached to the guru. Do they get moksha? No, because they are so attached to the guru. To them, the guru is the beginning and the end of their spiritual journey. That's why you need the guru for a particular distance. After that, you have to leave the guru aside and you have to travel on your own. Because the guru can only point you to the direction of moksha. The guru cannot take you to moksha. So attachment is a very, very big problem. So what is the nature of a stri mind?
Huh?
attached to, emotionally attached to home, emotionally attached to children, emotionally attached to spouse. So even a male who has these attachments is also called a stri mind. We are not talking about a stri physically, we are talking about a stri mind, an emotional mind. So you must bear this in mind. The direct translation is not woman, but it is an emotional mind. A man who also has this attachment to spouse, to children, to house, to car, is also called a stri mind. And therefore, you can conclude the Vaishya mind is what? A rajasic mind, extroverted mind, preoccupied in never-ending pursuit of money and possessions. And the third one is the Sudra mind, who is tamoguna dominant, who is given to laziness, ignorance, carelessness, preoccupied with eating, drinking and sleeping. So therefore, here we must understand the three type of disadvantaged people are due to their very gunas. Emotional mind, rajasic, extroverted mind, and a dull, introverted, tamasic mind. That's why you have three, Vaishyas and Sudras. These are the people who face a, what we call, barriers in their spiritual growth. But still Krishna says, even such people, if they take refuge in me with devotion, they will also attain that higher state. So that is the power of devotion. You don't have to worry about these obstacles. All the obstacles can be overcome when you start first with devotion. Because knowledge is not there, you don't have the knowledge. How are you going to attain knowledge? First you have to start with devotion. That's why up to these chapters, up to 12, the emphasis will be on devotion, devotion, devotion. And then in chapter 13 to 18, the final 6 chapters of the Gita, Krishna will take up Jnana Yoga or knowledge. So knowledge is the next step, but first comes devotion. Now therefore, if a stri mind, an emotional mind, an extroverted Vaishya mind, an introverted Sudra mind, with the help of bhakti can overcome all the inner obstacles, okay, because these are all inner obstacles in the mind. And what about the Papa Yonaya? His obstacles are not inner obstacles. His obstacles are what? External obstacles. But even Krishna says such a person with external obstacles, with devotion, single-minded devotion, can also reach me. So therefore, whether you have external obstacles, whether you have internal obstacles, devotion is your key to reach God. Now, in this next verse 33, he's going to... Yes, sure.
Is this the only place where the word stri, you talk about the stri?
I think so, yeah. I've not come across anywhere there is the word stri. I don't think so, yeah. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I don't think so. Yeah. Stri. Because, and then the problem is the direct translation given here, women. So that's what, you know, creates the confusion. You know. Whereas, as I said, pursuit of knowledge has got nothing to do with your physical ability, but your mental ability. So we must understand this from that viewpoint.
In the Gita Ashram, I think somebody gave a different interpretation.
On this verse,
on this,
okay.
Said that these lines are prophetic.
Prophetic.
Because women are disadvantaged. So
socially disadvantaged. Socially because they are controlled by men.
Controlled, so they need.
It is true that last time even women were not allowed to enter many temples also, and now also there are court cases going on and they want some of the court cases to allow women to go. But again, we are looking at it from the viewpoint of knowledge. So knowledge cannot do and has nothing to do with your gender, with your height, your weight, etc.
What about social status? The opportunity you get.
Right.
Doesn't it also, I mean, you want to pursue knowledge,
right,
but you're restricted
by
your environment.
So then it comes back to the external environment like Papa Yonaya. He gives an example.
Somebody like Meenabai.
Yes, exactly. Right, right.
Now she had the devotion.
Right.
It took her a long time to get
over
the restrictions imposed
by her
family. Right, exactly. Now that is status of women. Comes in.
It's true, that's why he's talking about both external and internal barriers. Papa Yonaya is external. At the same time, they are our internal barriers also. But the strength of devotion must be there. You may not attain in this lifetime, but maybe the next lifetime those barriers will be removed from you. Right? But we must not take this as women, because it's very dangerous. If we interpret as women, then we say all women are disadvantaged, which is wrong. Because how can you say all women are disadvantaged? Today look here, there are more women than men here.
It's an interpretation tool.
Huh?
I mean, the one who translated.
Yeah.
Correct,
exactly. So when we understand from the viewpoint of knowledge, which has nothing to do with the physical body but the subtle body, then we will not take this interpretation as women. Feminine nature, emotional nature, which is the mark of a mother. Mother is very emotional, attached to home, attached to her first priority is to spouse, house and child. And that we call emotional nature. But if a man has that same kind of attachment, then also it becomes a barrier to spiritual growth. But again, he says, you can overcome it by devotion. Ananya Bhakti. Okay. Yes, your question.
The mind can be free because of the emotional attachment. That the ones have the challenge normally they have is because they have, we also have our duties.
Right.
Part of our duties.
Right.
So that's the barrier actually where we want to free the mind, but because of our duties.
Right.
We are obliged by the duties. We also, and when we get involved, then we are actually distracted by these duties.
Right.
Which can actually have an impact also.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's only the challenge that you see as a householder that you face.
So what is he telling you here first? In order to overcome that, at least first start with devotion. You don't have to start with knowledge, you don't have to go on pilgrimage, you don't have to go to temple. When he says devotion means what? By doing your duty, surrender that to God. That itself becomes a prayer. You don't have to go to temple to be devoted to God. That's what he says, first start with karma yoga. Your very duty you surrender to God. The very results of your duty you surrender to God. You have already started on the path of devotion already. Because devotion is not standing in front of idol and doing this. Devotion is thinking of God all the time. And you can think of God anytime you want, even while you are doing your duty. That's all he's saying. Convert your... Because what did he say in the earlier verses? If you look back at 27... Look back at verse 27. The definition of devotion. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, turn your eating also into a devotion for Lord. Whatever you offer as oblation into the sacred fire, whatever prayers you do also, whatever you give as dhanam, even that surrender everything to God. That itself becomes so. Can you see now? You don't have to abandon your duties, you don't have to leave your duties, go to temple and pray to God. Turn those very duties into an offering to God. That is a sign of devotion. That's what he gave us, very simple. Huh?
Divinize
all your actions, exactly. Divinize all your actions. That is worship, that is prayer.
I want to ask you a question, which is very confusing to me. Like now the Ratri celebrations are going on. You see people going to the temple every afternoon.
Right.
I feel very guilty when I go to work.
Why?
Because I mean, the way people are going and they're so serious about it, maybe I think it's not necessary. So, I'm a bit confused.
Every devotee of God has got their different levels. So, to some people, they still need this devotion, which is nothing wrong. Let them carry on, do that devotion. Whether they like to go in the afternoon, in the evening, in the morning, let them carry on. Whether they pray to Devi or Ganesha. But for us, if we learn, we can convert our actions into prayer, then we are at a different level. I'm not saying don't go, you can still go to temple. But why not we bring that concept of prayer into our daily life? Convert your actions into prayer. And that's what the example is given us in 27. Right? And even the earlier verse where you say Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam, even you want to go to temple, you don't have to do elaborate pujas and prayers. Offer a leaf, a flower, a fruit, a little water. But with what? Devotion. That's all. So you can pray to God. In fact, the next chapter is going to tell you how to appreciate God 24/7, chapter 10. Okay? So, if these people who are disadvantaged with devotion can overcome their obstacles, their barriers, what about those who are sattvic people? If Rajasic, Tamasic, emotional minded people can overcome their barriers to spiritual growth with devotion, what about Sattvic people who are the Brahmanas or the Kshatriyas who have got a predominance of Sattva? Those people have no craving for Artha, for Kama, etc. They are very spiritually orientated. So, a Kshatriya has Sattvic Guna domination. Vaishya also has Sattvic Guna, but what happens? The Rajasic Gunas overpower the Sattvic Gunas. In a Kshatriya, the Sattvic Gunas are powerful. With Sattvic Gunas, they direct all their actions towards helping people, towards protecting people. So, Kshatriyas and Brahmanas are both what we call Sattvic Guna predominant. They have lesser obstacles. So, what Krishna is saying in verse 30, Kim Punar, what else needs to be said about such people? If Rajasic, Tamasic people with devotion can reach me, then what is there need to even talk about those people who are already Sattvic? They already have a bigger advantage already. So these people, he says, and who are they? He says, Brahmana Punya. Punya means they have holy or virtuous conduct. And they are the Brahmins. Brahmins, why? By definition, they are Brahmins not because of the sacred thread they wear. Why are they called Brahmins? Because of predominance of Sattvic Gunas. And that is a result that they lead a virtuous life, they have virtuous conduct. So these people were Sattvic minded, who followed Dharma, virtuous people, and also Tatha, Raja Saryas. See, Raja Saryas are the king sages, Raja, and they are also sages. Meaning they are kings, but they are also wise people. Why they are wise again? Because of Sattvic Guna predominance. Examples we have seen in Bhagavad Gita, such people like Janaka, like Lord Rama, etc., etc. Many such people are there. So, whether you are disadvantage or advantage, what is the basic lesson to learn here?
Devotion.
The power of devotion. Start with devotion. Understand the power of devotion. Whether you have advantage or disadvantage, start first with bhakti. So here Krishna says, in the last line, Mam Bhajasva, may you worship me. Start with worship, start with devotion. Doesn't matter if you are devoted to God and you only start as a what type of bhakta? We all start this way. Artha Bhakta, right? I want this, I want that, God give me this, God give me that, you know. It's okay. As long as you start with devotion, doesn't matter. You can go to God and ask for everything, but do it with devotion. So whether you start as an Artha Bhakta or Arthati Bhakta, it doesn't matter. But start somewhere. And of course some people will say, okay, never mind, I'm very busy now. So I start after I retire. But Krishna says, don't wait. Why? He says, Imam Anityam Lokam Prapya. Anityam Lokam, having prapya, having attained, having come to this Anityam Loka, the world, which is Anitya. Anitya means uncertainty, changing, a world of mortality, which means what? Anytime your life can go. Right? You have no idea when your last day will come. So don't wait and think that after retirement I will start devotion. Right? So he says this world is Anitya Loka. So if you have the ability to learn the scriptures, learn the scriptures. If you have time for devotion, have devotion. Because you do not know what is the next birth you are going to come back. You have no guarantee whether you are going to get this human birth back. So this is a temporary world which you have prapya, which you have attained, and you may not get a chance again to get this human birth. So therefore, very simple, if you cannot have elaborate prayers, simply pray for what? Morning, if you don't have the time, if you are rushing, just a simple prayer, what should you ask for?
Purity of mind.
Purity of mind, ask for guru, ask for scriptures, ask for purity of mind. Ask for all the obstacles to knowledge to be removed. Pray for that at least. If you don't want to pray for anything else, pray for that. So in Bhaja Govindam, beautifully Shankara writes, life is like a drop of water on a petal, lotus leaf. Anytime this drop of water can fall off and join the entire water or the lake. So it's so uncertain, just like the drop of water, anytime it can drop off, that is our life is uncertain. So don't take chances, move ahead. Now, it is not that the scriptures are trying to paint a bleak picture for us. While they tell you about the problems of the spiritual path, and in the Upanishad, in the Katha Upanishad, it is written that walking on the spiritual path is walking on the edge of a razor blade. It is mentioned in the Katha Upanishad. It is not that the scriptures are trying to discourage you, hey, it's very difficult, this part, you know, you better forget about it. No. They are warning you to wake up, to start your journey as early as possible. Because the longer and longer you wait, what happens? The longer you postpone the spiritual journey, what happens? More impurities build up and build up and build up, isn't it? More layers of impurity, more ego, more lust, more greed, more power, more anger. So you better start your journey early. And not only that, then the scriptures even give you a direction how to go there also. They don't simply leave you halfway. They warn you of the dangers. They tell you to better start quickly. Then they also give you a guidebook, Bhagavad Gita. Right? Then Lord also sends many gurus. He sends Swamijis. Everything is there. So you only have to take advantage of that. So he says, this life is very, uncertain. Very uncertain. So it is anityam lokam, the world that we have come to. It's very uncertain. On top of that, it is asukham. It is temporary, it is asukham, it is full of problems. So do not postpone bhakti. Meaning what? All kinds of problems can come. Health problems, family problems, financial problems, knee problems, eye problems, everything can come, isn't it? So that's what it means asukham. Right? So before all those problems come, you know, as young, when we are young, we don't realize all this. It is only when we are old. You say, oh, now I have this problem, I have that problem, I can't go. There are people who want to come to temple, but because they cannot drive, they want to come for classes, they can't drive, they have nobody to send them. So it is very late. So start as early as possible. Don't postpone bhakti. You do not know what problems can crop up in this fleeting problem riddled world. And now we come to the final verse of chapter 9. So now, this is a summary actually, the last verse of chapter 9. If you are interested to pursue a spiritual life, this last verse gives us 5 instructions to follow. It gives us a guideline. So he told you the disadvantage, he told you the advantage of bhakti. Now he's summarizing and giving you 5 instructions to follow this path of bhakti and progress one by one stage. So what does he say here? He says, the first instruction he gives is mad bhakta. That's the first instruction. Mad bhakta means be devoted to me. So start first with devotion. That is the first instruction, first starting point. Develop bhakti towards me. And we have discussed about this bhakti which goes through various stages. You remember ekarupa bhakti, anekarupa bhakti and arupa bhakti. So obviously we start with ekarupa bhakti. Be devoted to one particular deva, idol, whatever it is that you find favorable, start your devotion. So, and even if you want to ask for things from God, it doesn't matter. As I said, as long as you have devotion, go ahead and ask Him to fulfill all your wants. That is the first level. Then He says, mat parayanaha. You can see in the last line the word mat parayanaha. Ayanaha means direction or what we say like Ramayan, you know. Ramayan, the word ayan comes there. Ramayan means what? Way of Lord Rama. The way that Lord Rama led his life, that is what Ramayan means. We are supposed to follow. So don't follow Ravan, follow Rama. So here he says, mat parayanaha means accept me as the supreme goal, as the ultimate goal. Keep me as the ultimate goal in mind. So we should understand now, who is the person who will keep God as the ultimate goal in mind? What type of person will that be? how can you come to accept, or why would you want to come to accept God as your ultimate goal? Fully surrender. Why would you want to fully surrender to God? Moksha. Why you want moksha?
Because certain things you cannot change.
So, only when you come to understand the limitations of this changing world. A person who has woken up and understand and analyze his world and understands that no matter what I pursue, I still cannot remove my basic impurities. Only such a person then will change his or her direction of seeking. So once we understand the limitation of worldly goals, that they cannot give me ultimate peace, security and happiness, then only we will make God as your supreme goal. So Mat Parayanaha means make God as your ultimate goal in life, the highest goal in life. Third instruction, first was be devoted to me, that means practice devotion. Second is keep me as your primary goal in life. Third is man mana bhava, which you can see in the first line. Fix your mind, man mana bhava, fix your mind on me. So continuously do not lose sight of that goal. Keep your devotion on. So do not practice part-time devotion. Devotion is got to be 24/7. As he said, whatever you eat, whatever you do, whatever you give as charity, bring God into your life 24/7. So can't you turn your eating also into devotion? How many times a day do you eat? Malaysians are famous for eating. How many times a day do you eat? Many, many times. Every act of eating can be turned into a devotion. So how can we say we have no time for God? So, in our preoccupation with all the incidental goals, there is nothing wrong, we can pursue everything, but he says, make it a practice to keep me constantly in your mind. In fact, the same attachment we have to spouse, you know, we are always thinking about the spouse, or the same attachment we have to our children, or the same reverence we have for our parents. What he's saying, just take a little bit of that and turn the direction towards God. All the while thinking about your spouse, your house, your parents, your children, take away a little bit of that time and slowly turn to Him. Have some reverence, have some, slowly bring your mind and attach it to God. So that is the next instruction. Then he says, Mat Yaji Bhava. Mat Yaji Bhava means convert every action into worship. Whatever actions that you do, mundane actions, whatever action, convert them into worship. Which he gave us an example in chapter 9, verse 27. So worship now has been defined very clearly, not sitting in front of the altar and praying to God, but turning your daily actions into worship. And for that, all of us can do it at any time. Every routine action. So, Mat Yaji, worship me through every action, become a karma yogi. And then finally he says, Mam Namaskuru. Very important quality here. Mam Namaskuru, which means bow down to me. Have humility. So don't think that all your progress is only due to your own efforts. Also have humility, bow down to God. Accept His grace that He is also helping you to progress spiritually. So therefore be humble. So Mat Yaji is what? Mat Yaji means using your free will, putting in your effort to remember God. Namaskuru means understanding the importance of grace of God. So both must be there. I recognize my free will and at the same time I am humble, I bow down to God, I accept His grace. So all these five instructions are there for our spiritual progress. And what happens if you follow this constantly in your life? He says, Evam Atmanam Yukta. Atmanam here means mind again, not the soul. So Atmanam Yukta means when you follow these fivefold instructions, your mind will slowly be integrated to God. Your mind will slowly get committed to God. Little by little you bring your mind, you will get attached to God. But you have to put it into practice, you have to start now. And thus, what happens when your mind gets committed to God, mind gets attracted to God, then he says, Mam Eva Eshasi. Mam Eva, me alone. Ashesi, you will certainly, without doubt, there is no doubt you will attain me, which means you will attain moksha. So therefore, starting point is bhakti. And then from bhakti, it will take everybody to moksha. And as I said earlier, that when we accept God, we go through the three stages, eka rupa, progress to aneka rupa, and then finally reach the arupa. Stage by stage, slowly we progress until the ultimate stage. That is, we see God in, not only see God in everything, see everything in God. So chapter 10 is this. Chapter 10 is aneka rupa, where God will tell you, I am in the sun, I am in the moon, I am in the stars, I am in the mountains. Then chapter 11, so chapter 10 is what? Seeing me in everything. Chapter 11 is what? See everything in me. Because ultimately God is the source of everything. Because of Him the whole world has been created. So everything comes from me. Like all ornaments come from gold, all pots come from clay. Eventually learn to see all pots are nothing but clay. All ornaments are nothing but gold. So chapter 10 and chapter 11, he will take us through that, aneka rupa to arupa. And finally, will culminate in chapter 12, which is called bhakti yoga, which is the height of devotion. And we will understand what is the definition of bhakti. So now we have completed chapter 9. Before we start chapter 10, any questions? Yes.
Coming back to one question, does not she get that going in the hands of the mind? This is our scripture, right? And our scripture is talking about everything being God being born in the world. But then again, our scriptures are again telling us that both during the Navratri, the feminine energy is more, so they people.
See, when we look at rituals, prayers, etc., most of the rituals, or rather all the rituals, prayers, etc., come from two parts of our scriptures. That is, either they will come from the Puranas. So you have the Devi Purana, which will tell you, you do this type of prayers to Devi, you offer this type of flowers or leaf or whatever, chant this her mantra so many times, you will attain not moksha, but you will attain peace of mind, etc. Which is true. Not that it's not true. And then you also have the Vedas, which I've explained before. The earlier part of the Vedas, Karma Kanda, deal with all these rituals, etc. But at the same time, we also have the Jnana Kanda of the Vedas, which is the knowledge part of the Vedas, which is known as Upanishads or Vedanta, which tell us that ultimate goal is only one Supreme Brahman. Now, why are they different, practices? Very simple, because every devotee is different. Not all the devotees want to come to knowledge. Not all devotees can understand this concept of Atman, Brahman, etc. Many devotees are very happy with prayers, rituals. So if they are happy, let them do it. And that's why the scriptures say, do this. Why? Again, because he says, at least your mind is attached to God. So you hear stories about God, you hear about Devi stories, you hear Krishna stories, Rama stories, your heart and your mind is attracted to that. You sing bhajans for Rama, you sing bhajans for Devi, your mind is attracted. What is all this happening? It is all purification of mind. That's what is really happening. Whichever deity you follow, whatever practices, prayers you follow, ultimately is purification, which is very good, because that will bring you then to knowledge. So the very fact that you are here interested in knowledge means what? You have gone through a certain level of purification. That your mind now is attracted to knowledge. But at the same time, it does not mean that you give up your prayers and rituals. You will still carry on, but you will pursue the knowledge also. With that, So you'll find not everybody is interested. You know, and then you give all kinds of excuses, oh, too far away. When are your classes? Thursday. Thursday are not free. Saturday is also not free. Sunday is also not free. What to tell such people? You know, they are only 31 days in the year, they are only 7 days in the week. More than that, I don't know how to do it. But I don't blame them, because they just don't have the thirst for knowledge. So that's why I never push people, or rather you should not push people to come, because they don't have interest. But slowly, when they follow the path of devotion, they will come to knowledge. If not in this life, in next life. So again, everybody has got their own level to go through. Whether it is by prayer, by rituals, by whatever, by knowledge, all of us have got. Some like to do seva. They enjoy doing seva. Good. Let them do seva. Everything helps to purify the mind. Some people don't like to go temple, but they like to do seva. Go ahead and do seva. Some like to sing bhajans. Sing bhajans. But you must understand, in chapter 4, in fact, I'll take you to chapter 4. That will help to explain what I'm saying. Chapter 4, verse number... verse number 33, page 94. Here he explains to us what is the purpose of all his rituals, seva, bhajans, going to temples, everything. If you look at the third line, verse 33, sarva karma akhilam, sarva karma, all types of actions, rituals, prayers, dhanam, bhajans, whatever you do, go on pilgrimage, what he says? Last line, jnane parisamapyate. Parisamapyate means they culminate in jnanam, they culminate in knowledge. So do whatever spiritual practices you want, ultimately they will all culminate into knowledge. So once we understand this clearly, there is no confusion. Knowledge is the ultimate, the culmination of our spiritual journey.
Do you say knowledge? How do you interpret?
So, what is knowledge? Look immediately at the next verse. See the next verse. What does the next verse say? Tat vidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatva darshina. Find the guru. Prostrate before that guru. Surrender to that guru. Question that guru, serve that guru, and attain that knowledge, which is what? Spiritual knowledge. Because who is that guru? He is a jnana tattva darshina. He himself has already attained self-realization. That is the only guru that can show you the way to moksha.
I think you find many of the gurus that come, for example, are more money-minded.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Due to our karma, sometimes we end up with the wrong gurus. So don't blame the guru. Sometimes it's our own karma. You know, we have to give so much of money goes until we come to our realm. No, it's not that. You see, we must understand one thing. The gurus who go around giving knowledge, they have no other source of income. There are those who have totally surrendered to this knowledge. So yes, there are those who are only doing it to take money. But we also, it is our duty that these gurus who come, they have no other source of knowledge. It is also our duty to give them something, because in return for the knowledge we get. But of course, we do not know that who are the ones who are coming purely for money, or are they genuinely just interested to give knowledge, right? So it's something by trial and error we all have to go through.
That is, of course, you expected that you should be giving a donation if you get some knowledge. But there are those who charge very heavily,
yes,
before you register even.
You pay some money for it.
You pay a tremendous amount of money.
Right.
Probably in US dollars, thousands of US dollars. So those are, I would not want to go on that. Right away I would be wary of it.
I mean, there are all types of gurus, so we have to go through that experience and learn also which are the ones who are genuine and which are the ones who are not genuine.
But at the same time, a text like Gita, I was looking at the translation which is given here, you know, the interpretation of the verses. It's difficult to understand on one's own. So you do need a guru. For example, the way you have explained the meaning of the three today, women, that makes sense. But otherwise, if you just follow the translation
interpretation, of course. If you look at the direct translation, that's why, because from Sanskrit you're translating to English, so you take the word for word, yes, it's correct. But then you have to understand that meaning. What does it mean? So So that again takes time to understand.
Like the caste system?
Yes, caste system, yes, exactly. Yes.
And I think these things have been taken literally and that's created many problems.
That's why we have to be very persistent and consistent. Keep on reading, keep on questioning. See, you question. If you are not happy with it, you question. Then only you find the answer. If you are angry about it, it's good. Rightfully, you should be angry. Why God singles out women? Then only you start thinking until you come to the answer. But if you just read, finish. That's not
mainly good. Because of the literal translation, people have started thinking women are weaker.
Possible.
And therefore, they should not be going to temples.
Yeah, correct. It could be. Sorry, you had a question.
This is the thing I read last week. Uncomfortable feeling now when you go and stand at like they are telling you going for Navaratri, going for other prayers for long hours. But yeah, I was quite comfortable with it. But after being exposed to Gita, whatever we have learned from you, this uncomfortable feeling that am I spending too much time in this ritual rather than actually devoting time to
it's something you have to decide for yourself, because everybody has got, if you find joy from these rituals, if you find peace of mind, if you find happiness, carry on doing them. But if you find that I want to devote, take some time away from rituals and devote to my knowledge, then by all means you follow your heart, what your heart says. Right? Because I cannot tell you that, oh, you must have 4 hours of rituals, 2 hours of knowledge and all that kind of thing. Only you will know how much you want to get involved in rituals and how much of time you want to take away and devote to knowledge.
Because what I understand from this talk is, when I have material desire, I go for more rituals and go to them, religiously. But if I don't have material desire, then I go for prime knowledge.
So it doesn't mean that you don't have material desires, you don't do rituals. You still do rituals, but then what is in your mind now? The motive? Now motive is moksha. Motive is purity of mind. So if you look at sattvic rituals, if you look at chapter 17, there's thing called sattvic prayers. Because he doesn't say don't do prayers, but he classifies prayers under sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. Let me find that, yes. Austerity. Okay, look at page 296, chapter 17, verse 11, page 296, chapter 17, verse 11, verse 11, page 296, chapter 17, verse 11. Now, here he's talking about sacrifice, meaning yajna, meaning the prayers, rituals, all we do. So he classifies this as sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. Now, if you don't want to do prayers for material gains, so look at what is sattvic prayer. That sacrifice which is offered by men as enjoined by the scriptures, according to scriptures you follow, without having desire for fruit of the action. I don't want anything from this prayer. I'm not asking for anything material. I'm not asking for anything material. With the firm belief that it is your duty to do so. What you're doing is, you're praying to God, it is out of your duty. So, what you are asking for? Purity of mind, asking for moksha. That is sattvic prayer. Rajasic prayer is doing the same prayer, not different prayer, same prayer, but the motive is, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want that. And tamasic prayer is doing prayer to destroy others. Same prayer, the prayer doesn't change. The motive changes the prayer. So, nothing wrong if on the contrary, if you decided that I don't want to pray, I don't want to do rituals for material growth anymore. I will do prayers, I will do rituals, but I will surrender everything to God. I will ask for moksha. There's nothing wrong to go to temple and pray. It's a motive which we have to question. So we have to come out of that motive that we keep on asking for material things, more and more material things. Come out of that. Then our prayer goes from rajasic to sattvic. Yes. Sorry, something very practical.
Every day I pray, right? I pray to person by the time. So I do all the things, and then I pray to Amma, and I pray to Lord. But when I do that now, I feel, I keep telling Danisha, I know you are not uniform, you are popular, you are Brahman, but yet I still do for you, my aunt here, and see, because the only way I come to the road is,
but
at the same time, I go and do the, for Amma, I do the same thing.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
So it's like, it doesn't make sense to me, myself.
Don't change your prayers, carry on doing your prayers. That attitude that you have, what you change, that is the most important. You can offer your prayers to all the devas, but your attitude is what? All the devas are nothing but that one infinite form. Continue offering the prayers to all the devas, nothing wrong. Because again, I come back to the attitude. Once your attitude is corrected, do the worship. As Shankara, he composed hymns to Devi, he composed hymns to Shiva, he composed hymns to Ganesha, all the deities he composed hymns to. But he understood that all these are nothing but the representation of that one unmanifest. Four temples he set up in India, four corners of India. So it is not that he was against worship, but he understood. So carry on doing your worship, don't disturb yourself, carry on doing the worship. But as you say, you rightfully now corrected your attitude that all these are representations of that one infinite form.
You can say that Saguna leads you to merging the Saguna.
Exactly. So you understand the Saguna is a form, but the power, the Shakti is the Nirguna. With that attitude, pray.
When you go up to the idol,
no, very good, very helpful. To go through the idol to reach the ideal, exactly. And one day you will reach that stage whereby you can even sit in your room without any idol and you experience that bliss.
Even when you see the idol, you can just
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. You feel the bliss. You don't have to even open your eyes. Close your eyes and feel the bliss.
God is Nirguna.
God is Nirguna.
Which means has no attributes.
Right.
Then how can we say that God has grace, God has compassion, God has intelligence, an intelligent being?
Okay. See, again we talk about three levels of God. Her question is, if we say God is has no attributes, then how can we say God is compassion, God has love, humility, grace, etc. Now, again we talk about God at three levels. The first level is God with form that we all pray to. Nice flute, charming smile, holding flower in the hand and all that. That is the type we pray. The second is we come to the next level which is called only the attributes we look at. We don't look at the form anymore. Then we don't have to look at the form, we think about the attributes of Lord. What are the attributes? In chapter 16 verses 1 to 3, 20 attributes were given. Non-violence, humility, all these attributes which are in us means we are more closer to the attributes of God. So first is form, then is take away the form but concentrate on the attributes. Then take away the attributes and you come to the formless. So they called that Saguna, what is called, what the word? Saguna. I can't remember, but there are three levels, I forgot the word. So, at first level is the form, second level is we leave the form aside, we only concentrate on the attributes of God. And then the third level is when we come to the formless.
So, at the third level, at the formless level, there are actually no attributes.
Exactly.
Grace, compassion, etc.
There is no male, there is no female, there is no color, there is no size, there is no shape, there is no attributes at all. Totally nirguna.
But when you say concentrate on the attributes,
See, when you are meditating, of course the most simplest way to meditate is on your breath, soham, soham. So when you are going through this soham, soham and meditating, then you think about the attributes of God. What is God? God is love, God is peace, God is kindness. That's what is on your mind. So that means what? You have now removed the form already. You have now gone to the next stage. What you are telling yourself? God is love. God is kindness, God is peace. So from form you move to the attributes, to the qualities. And then only will come the final stage, which is the form.
Right.
So you don't, then you don't think of anything.
Yeah, then you don't think anything, but you experience the bliss within. Right?
So it's more going inward.
Inwards, exactly. So by closing your eyes, not thinking of anything, because how do we experience happiness? Either through our senses or mind thinks of something. But when your mind ceases working and your senses are all closed, and yet you experience that bliss, then you know you're connected to that bliss within you already. But that is going to take time. It's going to take some time.
So ultimately God is within.
God is within, exactly. That's what the scriptures are saying. The Upanishads basically, the Vedanta is saying God is within. So you don't have to search for it.
God's grace, it is the grace we give ourselves in a way.
God's grace is to remove the impurities in us. That is God's grace. Once God's grace is upon us, the impurities are removed, we realize ourselves is Sachin Ananda state already. So we pray to God to remove the impurities. That is what we seek for God's grace. Yes.
Can you verse 25.
Which chapter? 9.
9:25.
So okay.
Pray to God's response.
Right.
And it's, I will read Brahman.
God here, the word God here does not mean God with forms. It means those who pray with multiple desires for worldly desires. So the word gods here is in plural, which means those people who only worship for material ends, for multiple ends. So if you worship for those particular varieties of goals, that is what you will get. That's what he's saying. Those who pray to the gods will go to the gods. Those who pray to any idol, you can pray to any idol, but if your purpose is for attaining material goals, that's what you will attain.
So
but
the means also refers to material. So
means is we go to that loka where it is occupied by the ancestors. So you will attain that loka, means you will enjoy that happiness, that bliss in that loka which is reserved for all your ancestors. Because you are praying to them, you are seeking, again what you are seeking? You are seeking them to bless you with all kinds of happiness. But then what does he conclude? Those who worship me, attain me. So those who worship the infinite, attain the infinite. No, what is your motive? What is your motive now?
For knowledge and use.
Okay, so once you are worshipping for knowledge, you don't have to worry. Eventually that thing will dawn on you. You don't have to worry. Right now don't worry about it. To understand something which is without form, without shape, without color, totally unmanifest is very difficult. So don't worry about that. You just carry on worshipping that form, but asking for purity of mind, asking for scriptures, asking for knowledge, one day you will come to that. You will come to understand. Because nobody can explain to you what is unmanifest. You have to experience it yourself. So nobody can, I cannot explain to you what is unmanifest. I don't know how to explain. Right. So it is only experience. How will you experience it? Once your mind is purified, you will experience that Sachin Ananda within you. You will know when you reach that blissful state. Right? So don't worry about, you know, what is this unmanifest, how do I worship that? No, don't have to worry. That unmanifest is within you. What is that unmanifest? Sat-Chit Ananda. That you have to experience yourself. That's why the last part is, first is Sravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. Nididhyasanam is experience through meditation. You have to come to that.
First, you say when you start,
then
you want to make a change. So it starts from there.
Correct.
Then whatever comes, it will come on its own.
It will come on its own. That one day, that realization will come on its own. That's why even Ramakrishna, when he tried to explain to his disciple, they didn't understand. So what he did to Vivekananda, he tapped him on the shoulder. One of the stories is told. The minute he tapped him, Vivekananda went out the whole day. He could see nothing, but he could experience God everywhere. But that experience, after a while, it went away because it was temporarily given to him by his guru. So wherever he was walking, he could only experience God. But that was a temporary experience. Eventually, you will reach that if you carry on in that path itself, you will reach that. So don't have to worry about it. Yes.
What is that? You have the intention and the motive to worship the father. So let's say every day you can give you your own meditation. Like, so that maybe at first you're thinking about the form of God. And then will it be like eventually you start thinking of the attributes?
Yeah, of course, from that you will then leave the form and come to the attributes. And then from the attributes you will leave that also. And as I say, then you will experience it. Right? The most highest is the experience. That's why I say no guru can help you in that. He can only point you to the direction. But you have to experience it yourself.
So basically you are making progress on your own. I mean, you're doing it yourself. You're not just letting it happen to you. Like, for example, like, let's say this person only like, wants to go to the temple. Nothing more. He doesn't want to do the knowledge.
Right.
But what if this time the motive is that you want to worship the Father in this life? So if you make progress on your own.
That means that awakening has come already within you. That's why you remember chapter 10, verse 10, what he says? To those who are devoted to me, I will give them the yoga of knowledge. That path of knowledge will come to you. So that awakening inside will come to you. Then you know that you then you put in your own effort to move towards that direction. Okay. You have time after that. Yes.
You can make a big mountain, you can get it for all your activities at where the
right. Rather than?
Yes. I mean, rather than doing this
right.
Dedicate all your activities in your daily life as.
See, when we are doing prayers, what is the definition of prayers? How do you define? You say I'm praying. What are you doing? Thinking of God, exactly, isn't it? So, what is it turning all your actions into offering to God? Keeping thoughts of God in your mind. The more and more you keep fixing your mind on God, automatically the action that you are doing already offered to him already. Just like you offer a flower to God, you have thoughts of God in your mind, you are offering the flower. So when you have thoughts of God in your mind and you are doing your action becomes an offering provided you have thoughts of God in your mind. So that itself turns your action into a prayer, into an offering. And when any reaction happens to that, whatever you are doing, that also must not disturb you. So that also you accept it from God also. So your mind, you can know when you notice that your mind is not getting troubled. Your mind is calm. Despite whatever the result of your action, your mind does not get shaken. That is a sign that you have surrendered everything to God. So that disturbance in the mind is what we call, that means we have not totally surrendered to God. Surrender means we don't experience that disturbance in the mind. So two things, on action and on result, both we keep thoughts of God in the mind. Prayer is basically this, that's why it's called upasana. Upa is near asana, sit. Bringing your mind to sit near God, that's all, that is prayer. So while you are eating, what should you be thinking of? Think of God. Turns your eating into a prayer. That's all. Bring thoughts of God into your mind continuously. Whatever you are doing, bring thoughts of God into your mind. And then notice how calm your mind is. It becomes slowly.
You get educated
by
yoga.
You remember the FIR which I told you?
Yes.
So, that means we can judge ourselves through this. First is frequency. How often do you get angry? I is intensity. How bad do you get angry? R is recovery. From that point of anger, how fast do you recover? So, for that you can judge for yourself, are you progressing or not? Through frequency, intensity and recovery. So yes, there are times we will get angry. But how fast do we recover? Some people recover within few minutes. Some people take them weeks to recover. You know, that fellow called me donkey 1982. You're still carrying it with you. So that recovery period also is very important. If I recover fast, okay, that means I am progressing. So this FIR is a way for us to measure how much we are progressing spiritually. If every little thing disturbs us, that means we are not progressing spiritually. But out of 10 things, 2 things disturb you, right? That's good. So that means what? Frequency is less. Then we look at intensity. Some people get disturbed, they might just say okay and walk away. Some people will take something and throw at you, right? That's intensity. And then recovery. So all these three are a way for us to look at our own spiritual progress. Ultimately, everything comes back to the mind. How we able to deal with the mind.
What about the kind of person who doesn't do any rituals, any prayers, doesn't go to the temple, but otherwise the person is okay, he has control, he or she has control on desires, emotions, you know, Radha-Krishna,
right,
and does his or her work honestly, diligently, thinks about what is right, what is wrong.
Right.
And that person also, okay.
So eventually in the next life he will come to that stage of knowledge. He will come to that stage of knowledge. Because that means he has cleared all the hurdles, all the impurities. Next stage automatically you come to that knowledge.
But if he has the interest for knowledge, even without doing rituals, can he?
If he has the interest for knowledge without doing rituals,
he can still get to the knowledge.
Oh yes, of course. Of course. Definitely. Because ultimately is knowledge. So you have come to that. Then you leave behind everything. But that is sannyasa
already.
But you
might start with not wanting to do rituals and find your way to
go. Again, do you avoid rituals because you don't like them, you find them troublesome, or do you genuinely, you know? Because some people say, I'm jnani, I don't do rituals. Because why? I don't like to do rituals.
Because it might be because you can't understand the meaning, so you want to know more.
That's different.
And so you feel it's meaningless. And then you try to find out why they're there.
That is good. That is good. Yes. If you get the knowledge, it's
and
even
then
better.
You end up on, say, reading the Bhagavad Gita, and then you decide, well, the ritual one was it anyway. I can just refuse it too.
We cannot say the rituals are not worthy because rituals definitely are important. They are our starting point. Rituals, prayers are very important. They are our starting point. And they will keep us grounded also. They will help us to keep fixing our mind on God.
But isn't rituals all Brahmanism?
What is your definition of Brahmanism?
All the priests are what they are doing.
See, again, Brahmanism is what? Not the priest. Brahman is one who is sattvic endowed. So we cannot call a priest a Brahmin if he is instigating rituals to earn money. Then we should call him a Vaishya. So if a priest is doing rituals for you for the purpose to help you to remove whatever obstacles, that's fine, there's nothing wrong.
But rituals, does it really mean, can it only mean the prescribed rituals with the priest tell you or going to the temple, making offering, or ritual can mean just simply chanting or...
Everything falls under rituals, chanting, prayers, whatever, meditation, everything falls under
so
that.
So it can be that kind of ritual.
Yeah, yeah,
of course. Involving
yes. You see, those type of rituals which we do, if you want a specific outcome, then you have to follow that. But if you are not interested in any specific outcome, you're just interested to do a ritual to just worship God, then
or
any ritual,
how
to purify him, then any ritual will do.
Then even just chanting or meditation.
Chanting, doing japa, everything also will do. It's enough already. Right? But if you want a specific outcome, then you have to follow that particular rules and regulations. Then it's important. Right? So we will, any more questions? Otherwise we meet back next week on, yes, one more question. Actually, I'm the wrong person on rituals because I'm not a priest. But everybody keeps asking me for rituals.
I'm just curious about rituals.
Okay.
I find that all those rituals are performed again.
Right.
You don't find women performing rituals.
Right.
Is there anywhere in the scriptures to say that women cannot? Because when you talk about knowledge,
Even
can be knowledgeable.
Right.
So, make find women who maybe was more knowledgeable about spirituality.
Oh yes, of course, of course. There are many swaminis going about giving lectures and all that. Yeah. I'm not sure whether in our scriptures is there a restriction that only the priest can be only males. I'm really not sure. Something we have to find out. But then again, that is not part of our scriptures. Yeah, it's not. It is all man-made rules. These are all low caste, outcasts, and all are man-made rules. Brahmins and all that, which is not correct, because we saw that the interpretation of Brahmins, Sudras, it depends on the gunas and not where you are born. Let's end with the prayer.
Vasudeva Sudam Devam Tans Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru.
Thank you.